two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Okay, everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. We're hanging out here in studio. It's a Thursday evening, and that means we've got Thursday Night Football on the television in front of us. We've got quite the packed show for you as well. Mitch Harper from Cougar Sports Saturday and KSLSports.com. Our BYU Insider is going to join us next segment. We've also got the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell, is going to hang out with us at some point this evening in this hour, and also Bill Riley, the voice of the Utes. We are jam-packed here. Scott Mitchell, my compatriot, compadre, co-host.
We're going to hear a lot of voices tonight.
Yes, we got a lot of stuff going on. Well, look, this is a busy time of year for everybody, okay?
Yes,
so,
it is.
This is great for us because we have a few moments. You and I kind of part ways on the weekend, and you go to your Utah game and cover your Utes.
I go to my corner, you go to your corner.
I go to the BYU game and I cover the Cougs. And we've got all sorts of – and then, but here's where we come together. These are for you. It's an NFL question to start the show off, and that's where we're going to start, as we always do. It's our 7:05 cut. Let's do it.
The cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Struggling with ED? Sick of pills? Visit wasatchmedicalclinic.com for a free offer. So today, Nick Sirianni, he's the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. If I would have said, name the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Couldn't do it.
Couldn't have said Nick
Sirianni.
I could tell you
something about it, though.
Tell me what.
Well,
we're
going to have systems.
Systems.
Yeah, smart.
We've got people.
We've got people. Smart people.
We've got people.
And we've got systems.
And we have systems.
Yeah.
And we're going to employ those systems with smart people.
Yeah.
So that was his first press conference that he had before he came in. But the Eagles are 1-1, and they have a big game this weekend. NFC East matchup. And they're taking on the Dallas Cowboys, which, of course, that's an NFC matchup that's been going on for decades.
Yes.
And inside the NFC East, I would say the Dallas Cowboys are always the team that everybody wants to beat. Now, Nick Sirianni wore a T-shirt to the press conference this week that said, beat Dallas. And it had the two helmets clashing like an old Monday Night Football-style clash. And everybody started giving him guff. There were some people who were like, give me one of those T-shirts, man. I love that T-shirt, right? All the Philadelphia Eagles fans are like, I want these things.
Yes.
He said, my kids are wearing these. My wife's wearing it. I'm wearing it. We're going to beat Dallas.
Yes, and that's what Philadelphia fans always say.
Yes.
Beat Dallas.
Beat Dallas.
Yeah.
Now, the Cowboys have responded by, oh, you want to bring out those T-shirts? Fine. We're going to bring the heat this weekend, and it's going to be unadulterated. We're coming at you. And there was this whole discussion about whether or not – it's like, dude, you're not even our rivals in the East. And it was like, well,
yeah,
everybody kind of is. All those teams. The having lived in Dallas, the Redskins are your rival. The Eagles are your rivals. The Giants are your rivals. The 49ers are your rivals. It all really depends. And then I started to think, Scott, is there – and you could answer all this.
Yeah.
Are there true rivals, though, in the NFL? We don't do it like we do
in
college.
Yes and no.
No.
No, I'll explain it.
We'll be right back, everybody.
No. Come on, give me a chance.
Let me hear it.
All right. In the NFC East, absolutely. No matter what. Even if all of the teams are terrible, which they were a year ago. Which was really weird because I don't know that that's ever been the case. One of those teams has always kind of been at least on top. Well, it didn't matter. But, I mean, you talk about the 80s and maybe the NFC East was the NFL football. I mean, it was, you know, Joe Gibbs and the Redskins and Parcells. And the Eagles had really good teams. The Eagles never won a championship. And then Dallas, you know, won the championships in the 90s. That was just a great, great division in football. And so that's the yes part. Those traditions, those rivalries, Dallas hates Philadelphia. They hate to go play there. They hate the fans. They hate everything. Look, Philadelphia hates Philadelphia. I mean, that's how bad they are. Washington's kind of on the outs maybe a little bit just because they've been so bad for so long. And the New York Giants a little bit, but the Giants and Cowboys, massive rivalry.
I know it's
always
a rivalry. But it's not the same because, like, when you have a bunch of rivals, though.
No.
Have no rival.
Well, no, they're all – that's what's awesome about it.
What's the most important rivalry in that NFC?
Now, here's why I say no, okay? Rivalries in the NFL exist when two teams are really good. And it's cyclical, right?
Right. That's why you had the 49ers and the Cowboys in the 90s.
Or the Packers and the 49ers and – when I was in Miami and Buffalo, when I was with the Dolphins, that was a massive rivalry.
Seahawks 49ers a few years ago when they were both kind of right there on the
cusp. When you have those good teams playing each other, the rivalries are big. I mean, I remember growing up in the Houston Oilers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was a rivalry. And it's like the Houston Oilers don't even exist anymore. And you get the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens in kind of the early 2000s. And when one of those teams was going and winning the Super Bowl kind of thing or going and getting to the Super Bowl, that was when, you know, so the rivalries in the NFL are based not so much geographically or historically
or
traditional.
It's more just on the successes that you
except have. For the NFC East.
Well, that's
now there's another one.
I'm trying to think of the
Green Bay
that you
Packers
play.
and the Chicago Bears.
That's a
real rivalry.
That's a big one.
That's a real rivalry. That may be a deep, deep, deep one.
And that NFC Central that you played in, all those teams, they're some of the, they're the oldest teams in the NFL, the old NFL.
Yeah.
And so those teams have been playing each other
But I truly hated those guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't get Christmas cards from them either. You know, it's not like, you know, there was no love loss there between anyone,
What's the biggest rivalry in the NFL? Because when you look at it, like, how about like a game between the Ravens and the Chiefs this last weekend? Great game. They're likely going to see each other in the playoffs if things play out this way.
Yeah.
That's a rivalry that could be for this season. And so the NFL, on the one hand, like you were saying, it's great because these games are close. And yet at the same time, and if those games are close, then you have kind of a built-in automatic rivalry that happens for that season. But like the Dolphins, do they have a rival?
No.
Not really.
They don't. No, they did. I mean, the Jets were a rival for the Dolphins back in the day.
Because
the Jets had the Dolphins' number a lot of times, even when the Dolphins were good and the Jets weren't. They just still, for whatever reason, just had
the Then there are the teams with no rivals. The Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Houston Texans.
Like, they don't have a place.
I mean, even the Cincinnati Bengals don't even, like,
how
you
about
would
the,
think, like, how, Cleveland and Cincinnati would
no,
be a
yes,
thing.
Yes, they're in the same
thing.
State.
It's not a thing.
And they're in the same conference.
I don't know that it's ever. I mean, Sam Weiss, you know, said, you know, act
you're not
like
in Cleveland.
You're not, you don't live in Cleveland,
right? Yeah. But that was the closest thing they had to something,
and it lasted the 5 minutes.
But the reality is who do those teams hate the most? They hate the Steelers the most.
They do,
and that's the team that because that team has been successful, and that's always been the team that's been in the way.
I mean, Kansas City, as great as they are.
They don't really have a rival either.
I mean,
they hate the Broncos.
Maybe the Broncos, kind of a thing.
But the Broncos and the Raiders are bigger than that.
The Broncos and the Raiders, great rivalry. The Chargers and the Raiders, that historically was just –
That changed
NFL rules.
Yes.
That rivalry.
Yeah.
That was really hated. You know, the fumble situation. There were a lot of changes.
So what's the best rivalry in the NFL today?
The best one?
Yes.
The one that I still think it's one that involves the NFC East. It's that whole I just believe that rivalry.
So Cowboys Giants. Something along those lines. The Giants aren't good right now.
But even the Eagles, like the Eagles kind of have a way of being like annoying. They just, you know, just like this shirt, that shirt epitomizes the whole city of Philadelphia. I don't like Philadelphia.
I know you don't.
I do not like that. I do not like it. I don't care about the city of brotherly love.
You had a rough playoff game in that city.
It wasn't the only time.
Three Rivers is in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Old Veterans Stadium.
And that's gone too.
That's a gross stadium. Okay, listen. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. Mitch Harper, host of Cougar Sports Saturday, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com. He's going to join us next. We've got some questions about BYU. We've got some things to talk about. We've got him, and then we have Greg Wrubell right after it. You don't want to miss it, BYU fans. Right around the corner. Stay right here with us on KSL's Unrivaled.
Dave.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Alex got his haircut today, and, well, it looks shorter.
Well, you don't get your haircut if you're in my situation. You cut your own hair.
Oh, you do? Did you cut your own hair?
Yeah.
Oh, you did a nice job.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it looks amazing. You get the old number two clip on there. And then you're fine.
You're set to go. There's nothing like the old number two, except unless you have the old number one. I got a question.
We have
Mitch Harper joining us. Of course, he is our BYU insider and one of the hosts of Cougar Sports Saturday. A lot of fun things happening with the Cougars this year. I mean, they're having an amazing year. So good for Mitch and the Cougars.
Listen to that. Mitch, do you hear that?
Moving on.
Do you hear that? Good for Mitch?
Yeah, I mean, good for you guys.
It's nice for you guys. Yeah. That's amazing.
I heard that. Yeah. And like Alex, I got a fresh new haircut as well today too.
Did you use the number two?
We're in lockstep.
Did you use number two?
I did not use the lockstep. One of those guys I'm not talented enough.
Yeah, he could still get other people to cut his hair.
Use the clippers?
He has enough, he has enough hair to get other people to cut it. It's fine.
So I got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
The question's this. Of all of the football games that are going to happen this season.
Yeah.
Which game would you want to go see above any other game that's happening this year?
Are you talking about college?
I'm talking about NFL.
Any
college football game. No, not NFL.
Oh, okay.
No.
College football game.
Any college football game that you could go to this season,
what
game would you want to see?
Mitch, you go first. You've got all those schedules in your head. And the thing is that you're already going to BYU-USC. That's a fun one. Although it's on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would probably go with maybe Florida, Georgia, the largest outdoor cocktail party.
Just to experience it.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
Just because of how good Georgia is this year and how good Florida looked last week against Bama. I'm like, okay. Like that would be
maybe a potential
SEC title game.
My brother and I did that a few years ago and it's awesome.
And it's worth going to.
It is worth going to. I will say this though. If I'm going to stay in the SEC, I've never gone and I would love to see an Iron Bowl. I would love to see Auburn, Alabama, because those are two teams that hate each other. You know, we were just talking about rivalries in the NFL.
They've poisoned oak trees in the town square.
And that's what we were talking about NFL rivalries, Mitch, and how they aren't really rivalries unless the teams are okay or good, you know, and they're born out of being good and then they go away. And you have ones that live forever in some of these conferences, but you know, they're not like college rivalries. And so it's a little bit different because Nick Sirianni was wearing the Beat Dallas shirt this week. And everybody was like, hold on a minute. Is this like a college situation or what? So I think, looking at the Texans and the Panthers, and I'm going, those two teams when they played, those aren't teams that have rivals. You know what I mean? Like no one thinks of the Carolina Panthers as their rival or the Texans. They have no rival. So – all right, let's get to BYU. Let's get to this game this weekend. BYU's favored by 23-ish points. What's the status of Jaren Hall for this weekend? When we talked to him in the Players Club on Monday, it was, I'm good. Everything's good. Everything's good. Everything's great. And then it got a little bit more murky this week.
Yeah, it's especially when you heard Aaron Roderick yesterday when my co-host Matt Biamonte asked A-Rod directly about Jaren. And Aaron Roderick said, Kalani's the only one that talks about injuries, but he's been here. It kind of leaves it up for a possibility of Baylor Romney playing. And I think if this is the week and if Jaren Hall is if he is experiencing any sort of pain, whatever it may be, with ribs or whatever it may be, you want to err on the side of caution, because you got a big game coming up against Utah State the following week on the road. With USF, BYU can win with Baylor Romney. USF has a bad defense. They're going to play a little bit of 3-3-5, but this is not a good team at all. They got some decent personnel offensively, but BYU should be able to put up a lot of points against this USF defense. So if you can, it's rest Jaren Hall, and then he's back and ready to go for Utah State, I think that's the route you got to take.
Interesting. It always makes me nervous when you get in a good rhythm as a team, and then you sit out for a game, and that makes. But I get the whole idea.
Even if you say, "Well, this is the game you do it," because these guys aren't that good, I'm going, let them run it up then. Let them get some. Let them have that chance to be able to throw to these guys.
It kind of says that we kind of have a different approach to this game, and I think what's really bode well for BYU this year is they've had the. We're going to get after it. And I understand that the opponents have been tough so far this year, but you still have to respect your opponent regardless of who they are. So that being said, I think BYU is going to win soundly, whoever's playing quarterback.
Yeah.
What does this do for BYU as far as rankings go? Where's the ceiling the next few weeks for BYU in the rankings, assuming they're going to win these games?
Yeah, I think that BYU maybe could be, a top 10 team if they beat USF, they beat Utah State, and, find a way to get past Boise. Those are going to be tough games, Utah State and Boise, two rivals for BYU. But if you can get by those, I think you're knocking on the door of the top 10. And, that would be quite the run for BYU if they could get to that. And I think, this BYU team, what's interesting about this group, I feel like what they've done so far has been more impressive at this point than anything I've seen from last year. And last year was explosive.
Yeah.
And it was a generational quarterback. But I think this year has been more impressive because of the caliber of opposition that they face. Arizona's bad. They're not good. But I think Utah and Arizona State, they've got talent. They've got resources that are far greater than BYU as a P5. And they beat them at their own game and were playing physical football. Right. And I just thought – I just think back always to when Kalani 4 years ago was talking about how he wanted to be like a Wisconsin. That's what BYU's been the past 2 weeks. So Kalani's vision has played out in front of our eyes, and it's more validation compared to last year, where would they have played this way against those teams? I think this was a great moment so far for BYU. Now they got to build on it against a team in USF that should get them still hype, because this is a revenge factor game, because 2 years ago, when they lost to USF, it was a low, low point for Kalani Sitake's program.
It was, and Jaren Hall got knocked out of that game, and it was a weird game too. I mean, the fact that they had to claw their way back in, and they almost had a chance at the end, and USF for some reason was even in the thing. It was just a weird game. It was a weird weekend. There were a ton of BYU fans there on the East Coast, or from the East Coast, who were like, "Hey, we're going to go see BYU," and then they were just like, "What are we watching here?" And, Zach Wilson, of course, with his broken hand after the Toledo game and all that. So he was there on the sidelines. And I think that you talked about last year, Mitch, and I don't think that they have the success this year if they didn't have last year. And so having all those games and all these guys, how many players have we heard in the last little while talk about how they're like, "Hey, I know everybody gave Zach Wilson all this pub, but we're a pretty dang good team. Like, we were there too. We were doing all this stuff too." They want some of that credit for putting together that season last year as well.
Yeah, I think that is a great point, Alex. And I think also too, you've seen in the first month of the season in college football in general, we talked about what games we'd like to see in all of college football. I think we're seeing more parity this year because so many teams didn't get the number of practice snaps. They didn't get the game reps. BYU had a full season with a full season of practices. The teams they went up against the past few weeks, they basically took a year off of football, basically. I mean, Arizona State had weeks off with COVID. Utah had their deals. I mean, it was just a strange year, and BYU capitalized. They have been the program that has benefited the most out of anyone in college football from a pandemic stricken to the world. Like, BYU has benefited more than anyone. It's been remarkable to see what the pandemic has done, because without COVID-19, I don't know if any of this success is happening right now for BYU football. It's pretty remarkable, really, how they've capitalized.
And you talked to the BYU or the Utah players a year ago. They were impacted psychologically.
Yeah, they were like over it.
They really were. It's like five games was more than enough, and they didn't even want to go to a bowl game, and they were eligible, and they were just like, "Let's let this thing be done." So it did have an impact. It wasn't very positive. Is it too early for a discussion about the playoffs? Is this team a team that potentially could be in the playoffs?
Do you listen to BYU fans who are like, hey, man, the playoffs, or do you just try to put that in the back of your mind, Mitch?
I don't put any stock into the playoff, but I do think the New Year's Six is a possibility for this team, because I think that BYU now being labeled a Power 5 program coming up in the future and playing seven Power 5 teams, we heard last year from the playoff committee that if BYU had played their original schedule, there would have been more of a comprehensive data to make a bigger case for the BYU to get to the New Year's Six. I think if BYU goes 11-1 this year, they're headed to the New Year's Six.
So even if they have that one loss, they could still get there. Oh, man. I'm letting BYU fans imagine if they go undefeated, though. Why not? While you're still unbeaten, yeah, might as well do it. Mitch Harper, you can hear him on Cougar Sports Saturday, noon to 3 right here on KSL News Radio with Matt Biamonte every Saturday, especially during the season. Mitch, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll talk to you again.
Hey, no problem, guys. Take care.
All right. News, traffic, weather right now. We'll come back. Greg Wrubell, voice of the Cougars, is going to join us next. Stay with us right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery. Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us on the program. Just heard from Mitch Harper, and now we get to get the breakdown from the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell, who joins us now on the program. Greg, thanks for being with us, man.
My pleasure.
We're looking at this. I started getting into it a little bit with Mitch, and I thought, I'm going to ask Greg this question. How much of this year's BYU success can we attribute to what happened last year in 2020 after being able to put 12 games together in that season?
Well, I think it was helpful that you had Aaron Roderick in a position to, you know, have as much responsibility as he had alongside Jeff Grimes, not just last year, but prior to that. And, you know, by the time the bowl game came around, you know, A-Rod had to call the game, call the plays that day. And you know, he kind of already had shown, not just to BYU, but to others, you know, how adept he was with that role. And so there was really no shock to the system with him becoming the OC. And so I think what you've seen is a lot of hit the ground running in a lot of ways. Now, the point totals aren't there, but that's because, you know, BYU's played three P5 teams and two defenses that A-Rod himself said were better than any defense BYU played last year. So I think the point totals will come, but the plan is in place and kind of the standard was set, and they lost a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of the offensive line was gone, and they lost, you know, a top NFL draft pick and you know, an NFL wide receiver. And so it wasn't like they just brought everybody back, but certainly enough of the pieces were back and around them. And they, in a lot of ways, were kind of just allowed to, you know, swing into things again. And again, the numbers aren't there yet, but I think they'll come along.
Just so you know, Greg, the Pac-12 power rankings came out, and BYU's their power right ranking is number two.
That's good.
So Oregon is
they're honorary members right now, and yes, they still have two more Pac-12 games to go. Right?
And well deserved, by the way. So, you know, the thing that's I guess been most impressive for me with this, really, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's a resurgence, or the BYU just feels like it's really back on the map here. But it's been Kalani and his growth as a coach. What is the thing? Because you're around him a lot, you talk to him a lot. What is the thing that has impressed you most that he's grown as a coach over his time at BYU?
Well, I think one of the most impressive things was that he realized when changes needed to be made, and they weren't easy changes, you know, making a change in OC when it came and how it came was certainly not easy for him or the school. And yet it was a decision that had to be made and was made and resulted in a great deal of success. That was one of the first things you learned relatively early, that he was not, you know, afraid to or, you know, ignorant of needs and changes that appeared necessary. And so that was an early sign, right? But then beyond that, there was the sense that that he was occupying some of the same kind of emotional space as his mentor, Lavelle Edwards, that he was going to be someone who was warm and genuine like Lavelle was and is. Kalani is that person. And that those kind of traits and attributes, the true caring kind of love would kind of filter through and affect his coaching style and kind of the tone of the program. I think that was another thing. And then beyond that, I think you saw the fact that he came from Utah and spent as much time with Kyle as he did. It kind of established in his mind the kind of bar that needs to be set for BYU from a physical standpoint in the trenches. And now 6 seasons in, I think you see a BYU team that you know plays a little more like and looks a little more like in the trenches the kinds of Utah teams that were so good for so many years that Kalani helped form. And so I think those are just a few aspects that come into play here as BYU now in Kalani's sixth season sees kind of that resurgence you're talking about. And I really think that it's kind of pacing the right way for when Big 12 membership, when it comes, it won't be BYU, being dropped into a tub of cold water. It'll be more of an easier transition because of how BYU's been building to this point.
Greg Wrubell, voice of the Cougars, joining us here on KSL's Unrivaled. And in the years you've covered BYU, where's this 2020, 2021 year going to kind of live historically in BYU football lore? I mean, it's not just on the football field, but obviously the invite to the Big 12 and all the things that led up to that. I mean, you've been around. I'm trying to think of another year that would have as much energy around it than this year.
Yeah, well, you know, considering back-to-back seasons, right? I mean, you could take, the 1996 season, mm-hmm. But that's kind of a microcosm. That's kind of a season unto itself, the 14-win year. The 1983, 84, 85, those teams and those games were pretty special, too. BYU put itself very much on the national map, during those years, let alone those that preceded it in the late 70s into the early 80s. But in terms of, and even 2001 with Gary Croton's first year, you could argue that in 2000 with Lavelle quitting and retiring and Gary coming in 2001 and then winning, 12 games, that's a pretty remarkable two-year period there as well. But in terms of what two back-to-back seasons might look like in terms of sustained excellence, this is a pretty unique time period. And then when you throw into the fact, of course, COVID last year changes the entire perspective of it, and you add the Big 12 into it, as you just did, and it's tough to find, maybe a 24-month period or an 18-month period, if you want to go by the calendar, where more things would have happened to BYU football. And there's still so much more football left to play this year. But it's you're back in the conversation again. If you take care of business against South Florida, you're going to go into October undefeated in consecutive seasons, and that had never happened in BYU football. And again, you're in the talk and you're in the conversation. And then with each week, the talk becomes more and more prevalent. Could BYU sneak into a New Year's Six Bowl, which had never happened as well? So those things are all kind of on the table. And the way the season has started, there's every reason to believe the Cougars can kind of stay in that talk, in that conversation for a few weeks longer.
I don't think anything's off the table for BYU this year as far as those discussions, including the playoffs. I'm curious, you mentioned about getting more scoring. You're playing an opponent this week that you should win against. What do you feel has to happen in this game for folks at BYU to feel like this was another step forward in the season?
Well, I think it was encouraging that Baylor Romney came in and played, the way he did at the end of the game last week. And who knows how Jaron Hall is going to be feeling this week. I think he was being pretty tough, saying it was just the wind being knocked out of him by the end of that game last week. So we'll see. But, Baylor's already proven the ability to step in and win big games in the past. And so I think, your top two guys already kind of have a rep. And I don't think there's clearly Jaron's a special guy, and that's why he's the number one, right? There's a reason he's starting at quarterback for BYU. He does some things that few can do. In terms of combination of running ability and still throwing a good ball. But I think South Florida is a game you simply have to expect to, play your cleanest game, be better than you've been, and then hope that the numbers follow as they should this weekend. Things get really more interesting, guys, the next 2 weeks. Utah State and Boise State, they play each other this weekend, then they play BYU in each of the next 2 weeks.
Yep.
things wrap up in a hurry, and then you're going to be almost near the halfway point wondering where this team's really going to be. It could be fun.
And then you got another handful of P5s you got to face as well. So
yep.
It's going to be
the back half is tough, too.
It's going to be tough. We're looking forward to it. Greg Wrubell, he's got the call, of course, this Saturday, BYU-USF. It's going to be a 6 p.m. start here on KSL News Radio, and then, of course, the kick at 8:15 against USF down at Lavelle Edwards. Greg, we're looking forward to it, man. We'll talk to you later.
Me too. Anytime, guys. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take the break here. We'll come back. We got our MVPs right around the corner. Stay with us. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player, according to Scott.
Uh-huh.
According to Alex. Most valuable player.
Hey, sports fans, welcome back. This is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery, thank you for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. And, of course, if you miss part of our show, just download the KSL Sports app and get it anywhere you find your apps. And, of course, you can get all of our show anytime you want. And we listen to it from time to time ourselves. But we do appreciate you tuning in. It's halftime on Thursday Night Football in the NFL.
Is it 7-7?
It's 7-7. Yes, it's all tied up.
The Texans are overperforming, right? Like, they're 1-1.
That's the beautiful thing about the NFL, though, is you have teams you just go, oh, cellar dweller, and they find a way out of it. They just, over time, it doesn't happen overnight. I think of the New England Patriots. In my time in the NFL, like,
they were, when I was a kid, they were a giant joke.
They were just, and when I played in the, when I was in Miami.
They had a Cracker Jack guy snapping the football on their helmet. That was the
Cracker Jack guy.
That's what it looked like to me when I was a kid. I was like, who's this guy snapping the football
on
this helmet?
They did not put fear into you whatsoever.
They were the constant cellar dweller now.
And then the Miami Dolphins are like, they're bad.
They're not bad right now.
Better, but they've been bad.
Yes, they have been.
And Buffalo was bad, and now Buffalo's good. That's what's great about the NFL.
The cyclical nature of the NFL.
It's fascinating.
Scott, you can tune into our show, but you can't tune a fish.
That is the best dad joke that you've had in the 3.5 years that we've done this show. You have changed.
I hate the dad joke.
No, it's a great.
I know, but I'm just saying. I guess I'm warming up to it.
No, the kids.
Six
love
kids
the,
in.
The kids
six
love
kids
the
in.
Dad
I'm
joke.
Finally making.
They
dad
love
jokes.
The dad joke. Yeah, your kids will appreciate that.
You can tune. Hey, kids, I'll wake them up. You can tune into my show, but you can't tune a fish. Get out of here.
And they're like, Dad, we don't like
Dad,
tuna
why
fish.
Why do you keep opening my door?
So do you like tuna fish?
Yes, and all my kids love it.
Are you a mayonnaise guy with your tuna?
You know what I do, too? Hit it with the mayo, but I hit it with the pickle juice.
To mix it up.
What is Mitchell's problem? He's like,
I don't use pickle juice. It's like sweet pickles.
I don't like sweet pickles. Get the sweet pickle out of here. No, sweet pickles can off.
They can get right out of here. You put some nuts in there, like walnuts.
Now you're getting
maybe
fancy.
Some grapes.
What am I at a brunch?
You ever put grapes in your
am I at a brunch at the Grand America? What's going on here? Oh, sometimes I add a walnut to it. Just have a tuna sandwich, dude.
A pecan.
Get out of here. I had some grapes. And maybe some of those water chestnuts.
No, that's too far.
Watercress? What are they called? Anyway, Scott, did we already have the MVP music play? Yes, we did.
We did?
Yeah. I think so.
Yes.
So as we jump into it here, Scott, well, who's your MVP for today?
Okay, so I have a not-so MVP.
They so poo-poo?
They so poo-poo.
Let me bust it out here because sometimes, I mean, we have all these things set up for us, so we might as well use it. If it's not going to be an MVP, it's going to be this.
They so poo-poo.
What? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Poo-poo.
Right, who is it?
Everybody has
we haven't played this song in quite some time, and I realize why.
I kind of cringe, and I love it at the same time. It's just like one of those. Okay. But you know what? When I'm cringing and loving it, I always have a smile on my face.
Well, and
then you have a cringe smile.
And BYU impossible. Fans can kind of laugh a little bit and go, oh, remember when Tyler Huntley said, we so poo-poo, they so poo-poo? Yeah. And now... Flipping it right back on its head here. So
okay,
what do you got?
My not so MVP or they so poo poo.
Yes,
are the they're the baseball umpires who were
what?
They yes, just hear me out here.
Okay,
who were at a game with the Atlanta Braves?
And what happened?
Okay, so Adam Duvall, who is actually leading the league in RBIs and second in home runs at 37 home runs, has been a big part of why the Braves are in first place, hits a ball. It goes off of the outfielder's glove from the Diamondbacks.
Got it.
And goes over the fence.
Okay. Okay. That's a home run, right?
That's a home run. However, there was some confusion. The referees, what are they called in baseball? The umpires.
Yeah, they're called umpires.
All of them umpires or yes. The guy behind home plate?
Blue.
Blue. Hey, Blue. So the Blues actually got confused, did not signal a home run. Okay? So, actually, and they have names too. Sam Holbrook and Mike Malinsky.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
So what happened was the runner on first base ran back to first base, and Adam Duvall thinks he's homered.
Right.
So he runs past the runner going back to first base.
Yeah, got it.
Do you know what that means?
Yeah, he's out.
He's out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's the problem here? What'd they get wrong?
The problem was, so
it
he's
was
out.
A home run.
It was a home run.
Yeah.
The umpires called it incorrectly. The Blues called it incorrectly. So Adam Duvall gets a single, and he's rewarded two runs because there were two men on base who they got to go around the bases.
I thought that they figured this out. I thought they reviewed all this stuff.
No, right. It was a home run. And so he's out. Boom.
Okay.
And he's out because of the rules. But it's the umpire's fault.
So he
hits a home run. Yep. He doesn't get credit for a home run. He gets two more RBIs. And he gets credited with a single, and he's out.
He's out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it should have been another home run.
Look, if this would have happened in Little League, you would have had people punched out at the park.
But how do you get confused? Right? Yes. Of course.
I'm meeting you over by your – I'm going to meet you by your Toyota Tercel, Blue. That's what would have happened. There would have been a fight of some sort.
But it's interesting that this Major League rule came into play and said, why can't they go look? We messed up in this, and had we not messed up in this, he wouldn't have run past the player. And why can't they change
right.
that? And they just said, we're traditional baseball. You're out. That's the
You're gone. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So even if they would have – like the review didn't matter because it was because he passed a guy.
Yeah, it's like
he passed a guy.
You violated a rule.
Yeah. Sorry, 7-6. Missed PAT by the Texans. Oh, they're back to being the worst team ever. That's what that means to me. Scott?
Yes.
I'm going to bust out an old favorite.
Oh,
you ready for this?
Yeah. Dolly Parton?
You got it.
Ah!
Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton made herself into the good news news minute.
Wait, they saw poo-poo or she?
No, she's okay. No. She's on. I've okay. got this is a true MVP. Okay. Dolly Parton's Imagination Library is now honoring nurses at a local Knoxville hospital, and they have raised more than $2 million thanks to the Imagination Library. And you know what happens too is that Dolly Parton she shows up. So it's basically her imagination libraries are these, you know, it's just free books for all kids, free books for kids. And when they're born, they get free books and they can have books for all the way up through the age of like 12, I think. They can just go to these imagination libraries and just pick up free books.
Really?
Yes. And,
wow.
And cool. They just keep this thing going. And, they've also added on to it that as if handing out free books at these imagination libraries wasn't enough, Dolly Parton started a fund for nurses as well at the local hospital there in Knoxville, and she's donating to these funds for these local nurses who have been working overtime, but in some cases they don't have the funds to be able to pay them immediately for their overtime. Dolly Parton's like, we got to fix that. So boom, yeah. Dolly Parton finds her way. Somehow, some way, into the MVPs again.
Well, she's on her Mount Rushmore of MVPs. She's just kind of
she's there.
Permanent fixture.
Yeah.
There.
Who else is on there? So it's her.
Who else do we have?
No, Dolly Parton's like
Shohei Ohtani's getting closer.
Yeah. So there's 1.5 people on our Rushmore. It's the worst Rushmore I've ever heard of.
No, there's more.
There's got to be some more.
There was a time when Kate Upton was there.
But it was your own personal Mount Rushmore.
Buddy. It was a time. It was a thing a long time ago.
All right. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. News, traffic, weather now. When we return, Bill Riley, voice of the Utes, going to join us. Talk a little bit of Utes football coming up this weekend. And Spencer Linton, KSL 5 Television, BYU-TV, joins us next hour as well. So stay with us on KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City.
8 o'clock at KSL News Radio. I'm Jason Tulin. KSL's top stories this hour. The response time for police in Salt Lake City is getting worse. KSL News Radio's Nick Wyatt has details.
New data from the Salt Lake City Police Department shows its average response time for the most critical of calls has increased by about 6.5 minutes since the start of this year. One business I talked to on North Temple near 10th West says they've been impressed with how quickly officers have shown up when they've called for help, but Jake Cornea says his neighborhood in Liberty Wells is a different story.
Kind of scary. It's scary living where I live now.
He says he's called about shootings, drug deals, possible domestic violence, and potential prostitution.
When I, call about an incident, they just don't show up, and it seems like dispatch just doesn't care.
SLCPD tells me there's a number of reasons for the increased response time. One of the biggest, the 51 vacancies they still have as a department for officers. Nick Wyatt, KSL News Radio.
A deadly supermarket shooting in Tennessee leaves one dead, 14 others injured. ABC's Derek Dennis reports.
The police response time was immediate after gunfire rang out inside a Kroger grocery store in Collierville near Memphis.
We thought it was balloons popping. So when it kept on going, we said, no, there's gunshots.
Cashier Brignetta Dickerson, one of 44 employees in the store, says she saw the unidentified gunman close up.
He kept on shooting. He shot one of my coworkers in the head and then shot one of the customers. In the stomach.
Police say the gunman eventually died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. They're investigating whether this was another incident of workplace violence in America. Derek Dennis, ABC.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. KSL's Unrivaled. We just had like the equivalent of a hamstring pull in the radio world. Bill Riley, voice of the Utes, joins us on the program, and he can appreciate this. As we're coming in, Scott's putting the headset on. Here's the play-by-play, Bill. He's putting the headset on, and he breaks it in his giant former NFL on one side, Bill. Is he going to be able to pull it off? That's the question.
It's not like he listens anyway, Alex. Either you or I. So those headphones are just decoration anyway.
Wait, what'd you say?
I set you up for that. That's good. That's good. All you need is a microphone. So, all right. Well, this weekend, hope springs eternal for the Utes, Bill. We were talking with Devin Cafusi this week, and kind of going through one. Kind of the attitude of the team going into this week and obviously having the changes that they did with Charlie Brewer going out. It's been quite a long week for the team. I think that this Wazoo game presents quite an opportunity for them because that's who you want to come into town for homecoming week to at least get your team right.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything that's going on this week, I mean, you're 14 now, 15-point favorite in the game. You've got to go out and do what you should do at home. You don't have to win by 50, but you don't want to win by 5. They've got to show that they've made some progress, that changing up the offense with the quarterback and the offensive line is going to pay some dividends. And, they've got to start better, Alex. I mean, they've just been in neutral in the first quarter, even in the Weber game. They moved the ball down the field and got stuck in the red zone. So they have to get off to better starts, and Scott and I have talked about this. The tempo is important, and if you talk to Cam Rising and Kyle Whittingham, as I have this week, they both said one of the real in practice this week has been tempo and working on tempo.
We make up words all the time, Bill, so we get the meaning
plural
of what
is
you're emphasize. Saying.
Yeah. So there you go.
What I'm curious about is, do you think this is like a relief? Charlie Brewer, he's not the starter. They went in a different direction and he's gone. Do you get a sense that maybe this is a relief and the team can kind of just start fresh and start over and you don't have that awkwardness, that guy kind of hanging out with the team that isn't probably going to contribute very much?
Yeah, I think it was an awkward departure in some ways, but I mean, let's face it now, Scott, Cam Rising's the guy. Because Jaquindon Jackson's the backup, and Jaquindon Jackson is not ready as a redshirt freshman who's never taken a snap in college football to lead this team. So Cam Rising doesn't have to look over his shoulder. He doesn't have to worry about making a mistake and getting pulled out of the game. This is his team. And now Utah's got their quarterback for the next two or three seasons, depending on what the eligibility is. I think Cam's got 3 to play, but whatever it might happen to be. There's nobody right now waiting in the wings. It's kind of... you know, this is your game now. You know, you kind of look at that pitcher that comes into a ball game and you say, this one's yours the rest of the way. Take us home. That's Cam Rising right now. He seems well, you know, he seems well adjusted to it. The teammates love him. And now you got to just go out there and let it rip.
So in that sense, too, I mean, he came right into the game. Spark plug, obviously, throws three touchdowns. He's also pretty – I mean, he'll get you on his feet, too. And so how do things shift around for this Utah offense, if at all? I mean, does the play calling change? Do you adjust to Cam Rising in a totally different way? Does Andy Ludwig have to change a lot on those play sheets?
No, I actually talked to Andy yesterday for a while, and I asked him the question. I said, Andy, is the offense that you're going to run now moving forward going to look a lot like the offense we saw in 2019 with Tyler Huntley? And he said to me, that's a very astute observation on your part, Bill Riley. Mm. So the stuff that you saw them do with Huntley, because Huntley was mobile, moving the pocket around a little bit, getting them out on the edge to be able to, you know, kind of move things around. They can run. Andy's doesn't, you know, there may be an occasional designed run. Cam's a big guy, 6'3", 220. But I think the offense that you're going to see moving forward here, guys, is very similar to the one that we saw in 2019 that Tyler Huntley thrived in.
I think that the term they've been using this week, Bill, is he's a thick boy. That's been the hashtag this week. I have no idea why. The Utah
Cam Rising's thick.
That's what they said. Yes, thick boy. That's what. That look for the hashtag.
I'm just trying to figure out astute right now. That's another. You've been throwing out your big words.
I will tell the story of Thick Boy 7 in the pregame show on Saturday.
I'll have to listen.
I love it. Explain what a hashtag is while you're at it to Scott while we're doing this.
I know what hashtag is. Y'all leave me alone. Listen. Clearly, there's things that have to happen with this offense, but defensively, this is going to be the first time that this Utah defense, and I still consider this defense kind of young and learning and growing, that they'll face a team that really throws the ball, and this secondary is going to get challenged. But not only the secondary, the upfront rush is going to be challenged. Where do you think this Utah football team is defensively to be up to the challenge of a really legitimate throwing team?
You know, it's funny, Scott. I had Eric Weddle on my show today, and you know, Eric was at the game on Saturday, and Eric came full barrels, both barrels blasting with the flamethrower today. He said, "This doesn't look like the Utah defense I played in." He goes, they're playing off. He goes, did our corners ever press up? Which is, I know, something that's bugged you for a while. He said, I don't see that extra bit of effort. I don't see guys running to the ball like it's a every play's the last play. Weddle was pretty disturbed by what he saw. And I just have this feeling that we're going to see maybe a little bit more of the Utah defense, even with those young kids in the secondary. But I'm with you. I think it starts up front. We haven't seen a team that really drops back and throws it. Weber pretty much waved the white flag at halftime, and they ran the ball. BYU picked their spots, but they didn't drop back a bunch. And when they did, they kind of got Hall out and moving around. Last week, San Diego didn't want to throw the ball, but Washington State's going to throw it 50-55 times. So Mika Tafua and Xavier Carlton and Van Fillinger up front, they're going to get their chance to rush the passer and put some pressure on them.
Bill Riley, voice of the Utes, joining us on KSL's Unrivaled. What do you think that, I mean, everybody now is going, yeah, it's fresh start. You haven't started Pac-12 play till this weekend. Has the team lost a little bit of that identity, too, of, hey, we were picked. I mean, you picked the Utes to win the Pac-12 South, and Scott did, and we looked at it and went, this team's really, really good. And it was like we saw a totally different team in these first three games of the season.
I think they did get a little lost a little bit, Alex, but I think the refocus this week is with the beginning of Pac-12 play. Yeah, you can say all of your goals are in front of you, and you can still say you're eligible to win it, but you better beat Washington State first. You can't talk about winning the South and winning the league anymore. You haven't shown you could beat a Mountain West team right now. So you've got to take it one game at a time. Those goals are all still in effect, and to be very fair, the Pac-12 South is wide open. I don't know who the best team is. Utah could still end up being the best team, but they can't worry about, you know, playing Oregon or getting that championship, any of that stuff.
Sure.
You got to be Washington State, because if that doesn't happen, you know, you could probably kiss the chance of meeting your season goals away.
And then in 2 weeks, they got to go down to the Coliseum, and so it gets even tougher.
How do you feel about El Paso and the Sun Bowl, Bill? That's what I want to know.
Stop it. Will you stop
I've been
it?
There twice, Scott. El Paso in late December.
It's amazing. I think Kramer said it right on Seinfeld. I spent a month there one night, and that's how everybody feels who have visited El Paso. Bill's got the call on Saturday, 12:30 kick on ESPN 700. You can hear him there. And my compatriot Scott also gets on the call with him. Bill, thanks for hanging out with us, man. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, boys. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Taking the break. We come back. Spencer Linton, BYU TV. KSL 5 Television is going to join us next right here in studio as Scott tries to figure out how to super glue those headphones before we get back. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery here. Of course, we have Spencer Linton. Okay, what's your name again?
You got
three,
it.
Three, two,
one.
Are we live? Are we doing this live?
Yeah, yeah,
of course we're live.
Now, if you go, but you gotta say Linton. You can say Spencer Linton.
Linton?
Yeah, yeah.
From Linton.
From Layton. Now, you're from Clinton, though,
yep.
right?
Linton from Clinton.
Yes.
Did you go to Clearfield High School? Where did you go to high school?
Northridge.
Okay, you're a Northridge guy.
I'm a Northridge guy, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm all about it. Let's go.
Yeah.
So I've been screaming.
Now that I'm a Davis County guy,
you know all about it.
Well, yeah, because my kids all play Davis stuff, and so we have to play. Northridge last week.
How did you feel about the Davis darts? Really?
Yeah, I don't care because it's not like I grew up.
Really?
There.
When I went to Northridge,
yes,
and we were too busy beating them on a regular basis to worry about them.
Did you hear that?
It's the colors. So, like, I don't even think Davis dart people like.
I have
colors.
A hard time with.
I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. I heard a weird story one time about the original 10. Like sets of colors for high schools in Utah.
10 sets?
Yeah, and it came down to two schools. There was Roy and Box Elder, and there were two sets of colors left. It was like a lottery.
Right.
Okay? And Roy...
Black and gold, not bad.
Opted for black and gold.
Yeah.
Over purple and white, which purple and white equal royalty. So, and the Box Elder Bees ended up with purple and white instead of yellow and black.
Right.
And they're the Bees. Hey,
that's
whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well,
but back in the day, everything was in black and white. There wasn't even, like, they didn't have color photos.
I actually thought
so
that when
really...
I was a kid. I was like,
I
Mom,
couldn't
when
see
did...
any colors.
Bill Walton comes in. I actually told my mom one day, I was like, when did it actually change over? When did it change from black and white to when did we start seeing color? Because, like, all the pictures of when my mom was a kid, I was like, I seriously thought that's how everything was seen.
The Wizard of Oz, that changed.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. Yes.
Gone with the Wind was like one of the first colors.
That was the first full
movies.
Color.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Spencer,
that was in the 30s.
It was. Okay. I've got, now that we've gotten the discussion of Davis County High School football colors.
Yeah.
It's good. We figured it out. Davis is apparently the color of the mountain, by the way, in the fall.
Yes. That's what they said it was. That's how it is.
I didn't know this.
But yeah, they'd be like the beautiful brown and goldish yellow.
Utah's brown in the summer. I mean, it didn't even take fall to get that color.
The Davis darts and their gold championship trophies, the brown leaves.
I know. And, you know, and then Farmington rolls up and they go, we're going to be teal. It's fine. All right. So we were talking with Greg Rebell about an hour ago about this game on Saturday.
Well, why are you talking to me? You talked to the guru, right?
Yes.
He didn't really have a lot to say, though.
He's more Greg's more straight shooter.
Yep.
You know, he'll give you the...
Oh, no, absolutely.
And so we want to get the more loose version of the tale here.
Okay.
So what's this BYU team's ceiling? And where are the places that they could slip up? Because in the end, I think that all of us who are, like, jaded... People who followed BYU for a long time and
waiting
just go,
for the slip up.
Let's see when they lose to Utah State up in Logan. I mean, there's that stuff that creeps in.
They
where
can't
you go,
slip up this year, though.
No, but I mean, like,
they've won three Power Five teams already.
Will you stop it? This is what Scott does. He just lulls you into false sense of security. So my question is, where are the slip ups on the rest of the schedule?
Okay, so I think the first legitimate slip up is with Boise State at home.
That's a possible.
You don't think Utah State's a slip up?
I think BYU is going to be so locked in because Utah State has been better than expected. Like, they will not overlook Utah State.
And you think they'll overlook Boise?
If Boise State is 2-3, Think about this.
After beating them 51-17 last year.
Yes, and the year before that, Boise State was ranked number 14.
When they came in.
They were like 6-0.
Yeah.
BYU was 2-4.
They had Baylor
Romney.
Yeah.
It was a weird, rainy night, and Boise State was absolutely overlooking BYU. Yeah.
And Matt Bushman rolled in and just scored touchdowns.
Yes. That's the night that Aaron Roderick took over the primary play calling responsibilities.
What about Bronco Mendenhall and Virginia? I mean, there's no discussion about that at all.
They got a quarterback. They can sling it again. You know, they're
throwing the ball 60 times. I think it makes Bronco super nervous.
I'm sure it does. I think they can score a lot of points. I don't know I don't know how physical Virginia is. I need to watch them more closely. I've watched a ton of their passing highlights. Like, they can absolutely sling it all over the field.
Baylor was terrible last year, and suddenly everybody's like, that's going to be a really, really tough game down in Waco
yes,
now, too.
It's homecoming in Waco. That people are like, oh, the tickets are more expensive because it's BYU. There's like this huge homecoming spectacular every year, apparently.
Nice.
Yeah, and there will be BYU fans there, and it's going to be a big deal. But, yeah, Baylor's kind of sneaky. Future Big 12 foe. Maybe they want to send a message to BYU. Grimes and Mateos now.
Oh, yeah.
Baylor, do they know these BYU personnel?
They know the play. They know the plays that Aaron Roderick called. So.
Yes, so does Aaron have to, like, make a whole new game plan for Baylor?
Yeah, I just don't think that's as much of a thing as people think.
Really?
I don't.
Well, actually. Scott says that, yeah, stealing plays and going back and forth doesn't happen nearly as much as we think it
gotcha.
Would.
Gotcha. We're more conspiracy theorists about that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, because in the end,
you're making me
hollow.
Feel better about that game,
you
Scott.
You should, yeah. But the earth is hollow as far as conspiracy.
as far
okay.
as Kevin Kaufusi.
No, I'm with you. Virginia's a weird game.
Yeah.
A weird emotional game.
Right.
That's a potential slip-up. Baylor's a potential slip-up. And then, as I mentioned, Boise State, just because you got to believe that the Broncos, after these 2 years of BYU just putting it on them,
yep.
are like, we owe you something.
Well, yeah, and like every Boise State fan I've chatted with in the
last
year.
Oh, they want to beat BYU badly.
Well, I mean, was that our fifth string or fourth string quarterback last year? They love bringing that up.
Well, now they've got Hank Bachmeier, so if BYU beats them again, they have no excuses.
Right. So, in the end, all these games are in front of BYU. USF is this weekend.
Yes.
23-point favorite. Not much of a defense. It's more of a defense that they saw kind of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, what did they learn in those first three games? I keep saying they got to score a lot of points, and I know it might not necessarily be Jaren Hall that we see trotting out there.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know what it's going to end up being. So, what does BYU have to do now to feel like, oh, we've made a step now, even though we're playing a lesser opponent this weekend?
Well, I think they've already proved to themselves a lot of things that they have not been able to do in the recent past, and that is when you get into a weird situation late in a game and it gets kind of stressful and dramatic. They've answered the call. Like, they've had to have a drive, right? They had to have a drive against Arizona to lock that one up, as bad as Arizona is. They had to have a drive against Utah to finish that off, and they had to do the same thing against Arizona State, and they've done it. So this is kind of unorthodox for BYU. Fans are like, oh, great, here we go. Yeah, BYU's going to blow it against Utah. Oh, great, here we go. Then BYU's going to blow it against Arizona State. They've answered. They've had drives.
Right.
Sure. And they did it up front.
Scott pointed that out, too. Yeah.
Yes.
That instead of just, like, relying on defense, they were like, let's have a long drive that you can't stop the offense on, which is not something that BYU has had in the past.
So we're getting used to that. So I think that builds a lot of confidence. 19-3 in their last 22 games, 14-1 in their last 15.
That's wild.
I know. Kalani's writing his own checks right now, that's for sure. He has made it clear, like, remember what happened at USF? And weirdly, okay, so I said 19-3 in the last 22, right? The game that started that streak, that turnaround, was USF. That loss was like a bottoming out moment for BYU.
Yeah.
They were 2-4. They followed up. They win 5 straight. They win 19-22, 14-15. So that it was kind of a turning point game, and they're excited to like bring this thing full circle. So I think they'll cover the 23-point spread.
Wow.
I really do. I don't care if Baylor Romney's quarterback either. I think they will cover the spread.
Yeah, I think Baylor Romney's been there a long time. Has been calling these plays there, and Roderick's dialing up for the last two or 3 years. So
I think he's excited about throwing it into the hands of all of his receiver weapons.
Yes.
He's ready to go.
It's really good. Plus, on top of it, I think this is where, one, USF's rush defense is awful. It's abysmal. So, in the end, Tyler Allgeier could have a day. Lopini Gatoa could have a day. We could see the other names in the backfield that we've been waiting
to see. Jackson McChesney.
Hinkley Rapati, right. You start to see Hinkley's massive, by the way.
Jeez. He's a beast. I mean, you're asking ceiling, Alex. I mean, I hate to project losses. I anticipate probably 10-2 in the regular season now. But gosh, an 11-1 team, whew, that could do something special.
Be wild.
We'll see. It's a lot to ask.
Spencer, what's going on the news tonight? KSL5 television.
Well, we've got a bevy of sports, Alex.
A bevy.
Just a awesome NFL game going right now, 7-6.
No, it's 14-6 now.
Carolina scored again. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
11th-ranked BYU volleyball. The women are back in action. And let's preview those Aggies. Let's not overlook the Aggies.
Yeah, why not?
They might be Boise undefeated. State.
I know.
10 a.m. Let's go.
Why not? Get the herd behind them and start yelling at those Boise State fans. All right. Spencer, we'll talk to you again, man. Thanks for hanging out.
Appreciate you guys.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
You look beautiful.
I know
tie.
I don't sound great.
Look at his tie, man.
But
Spencer always looks great.
I know he does. All right. We got to start wearing ties in the studio. All right. Spencer, we'll talk to you again, man.
All right, guys.
Good
thanks.
To see you. All right. News, traffic, and weather now. We'll come back. NFL roundup. 2-minute drill. Stay with us on KSL's on Rival.
Rivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and the other guy. It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
All the NFL stories you can handle, bro. The NFL Roundup. I'm Alex Keery. He's Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging out. Last couple segments of the show tonight. Let me see here. Scott, I didn't know what to think about this story that I saw about Zach Wilson today. Because I saw it when I woke up and I thought, well, so what are we talking about here? Are we talking about a guy who's been injured the whole time and that's why he's been struggling? Are we talking about Zach Wilson? Apparently has been dealing with a groin injury that he suffered week one.
Nobody cares.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like,
no, nobody cares.
Is it a real injury if you, one, never hear about it, and two, don't come out of the game ever? I get that they're like, well, and they're gonna have to nurse this thing all season long. Are they doing that to set up an excuse? Why would you roll out this groin injury deal? I'm not saying that he doesn't have some soreness or that he's trying to figure this thing out. He probably wouldn't you be injured half of the time?
Like, everyone has a groin injury right now. Everybody. Like there's not.
I don't know anybody who doesn't have a groin injury. Well, just
hearing this now.
Oh my gosh!
Look, here's the thing.
it's the most common. Hey, everybody, hey guys, no. I know everybody's got a groin injury. Stand up.
Before the season started, I said, look, Zach Wilson, I would be surprised if he makes it through the whole season healthy. And it's not Zach Wilson. It's just it's a really strenuous grind, and I don't think you initially really understand all of what it takes to make it through an NFL season healthy. The reality, when I said the whole everyone has a groin injury thing, everyone's dealing with something.
Something.
I mean, it's just something.
Yeah.
It's just and nobody is free of it. And so you're trying to manage and mitigate and minimize what kind of injuries that you have and still be able to play. And most people, I hate to say this, but do it through medication. I mean they you know they're pretty pain free when they're playing in the game. I mean, that's just par for the course. And the reason is the NFL is so competitive that if you're not out on the field performing at a high level, then you're gone. And someone will take your place. And so having a groin injury, dealing with a groin injury, whatever injury you're having, guys just don't come out of the game.
They're dealing with it.
They just all deal with it.
So
it's weird to me, Alex, that they've actually brought this up. You may be right. I mean, it may be about an excuse.
Just to kind of take some pressure off him to go, well, he can always kind of lean back on that, right?
But it makes more it puts more pressure on him. Because you know what people start to say? Oh, this guy's soft. This guy, you know what? He has all the excuses. Got all the answers, all the excuses. People don't care. I'm just telling you, they don't care. They want results.
They just want to win.
I don't care if you have four fingers, you've cut half of them off. I don't care if you've broken. It doesn't matter. People.
Yeah, and in the end, they go, hey, man, how'd you do this weekend? You guys didn't win? All right, moving on.
Yeah.
I've stopped thinking about you. that's what it is. And in New York, they just get super critical. File this next one under headlines that I don't know how they became headlines. Tim Tebow has confidence in Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. I just was like, I love the eye roll he just gave. I wish you guys could. It went from like one speaker to the next in somebody's car where they're just listening. No, but like Tim Tebow has confidence. This is a guy who got cut like way before the process even started. What does that mean? If Tim Tebow has a bunch of confidence in me, I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling like, oh boy, we're in trouble. If the guy who has no idea how to, a guy who can't make it in the league has a bunch of confidence in us?
That's my whole, yeah.
What the heck is going on here?
It's like, does anyone care that Tim Tebow has confidence in Urban Meyer? I mean, really.
Tim Tebow also reported a groin injury, Scott. I don't know what I mean.
That was Tim's problem. He had a groin injury. The thing about Tim Tebow right now is if it's a ploy by him to make himself look better, like Urban Meyer cut me. Okay, he gave me a shot. He cut me on the team.
The point of bringing
and
it up
I'm
is.
Still in his corner. Like, yeah. I'm not bitter. I'm not upset. I'm still in Urban Meyer's corner. I don't know if this is a way for Tim Tebow to just kind of, I don't know, move the needle, stir some interest, whatever. You know what? I have a lot of confidence in Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is a really good football coach.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Tebow tell me that he's a good
coach. No, if anyone
can
figure it out, it's Urban Meyer.
It's kind of patronizing if Tim Tebow goes, I think they'll be fine. You know, I have full confidence in them. And people are like, what are you talking about?
Maybe I'm not shocked at all with what's happened with Jacksonville right now in the season. Like, what's happened? I go, okay, great. You've lost two games. It's like, oh, no, Urban Meyer's now a bad coach? No, I don't think that.
Yeah.
I don't know who Trevor Lawrence is yet.
I know. No one does that.
And I don't care. I'm not sitting here going, oh yeah, this, oh no, Jacksonville's not very good this year. No one cares.
Okay. Speaking of nobody cares, this is a guy who people kind of here in Utah have a little bit of a, because I think he graduated from BYU, and I know he's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Alex Guerrero, does that ring a bell? That's Tim Tebow's trainer. That's the guy who. So this is
Tim Tebow's or Tom Brady's?
Tom Brady. I'm sorry. Tom Brady's trainer, and he when a trainer rolls out comments about a team, I'm like, what are we doing here? What? And he rolled out some comments about how the New England Patriots, according to Alex Guerrero, did not evolve enough during the time that Tom Brady was there. I was like, it's good enough for six Super Bowls, by the way, over those. They only won it back-to-back once. So it wasn't like that. If you're saying they didn't evolve, I don't get what he's saying. He's like, oh, yeah.
He's basically saying
this old guy, this old coach never evolved. He didn't evolve enough for Tom Brady to really be successful.
He evolved enough to get Zach Wilson to throw four interceptions last week. I mean, maybe that's not good enough for Tom Brady.
It was a groin injury. Come on.
It was a groin injury.
Yeah.
I didn't take into account the groin injury.
So
here's the thing, okay? And this is the bad part of the NFL. And everyone's guilty of this. I am the reason why we have success. Like the ego of everyone in a situation. So Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson, I'm the reason. Well, you know what? Then you're fired or you're out. I don't want to be here. And they didn't have the same success apart. And no one gets that. Everyone thinks I'm the reason. I'm the linchpin in this whole thing. If I'm gone, it's over kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, Bill Belichick thinks that. And the trainer, Andre Gordy, whatever his name is. And Tom Brady thinks. Julian Edelman thinks it.
No, I know. So, but he did.
Except
he did
Gronk.
Go on.
Gronk doesn't care.
Gronk's
the only guy.
Dude, I think that's Tom Brady, man.
Woo.
See, I almost dropped the Super Bowl trophy to Tampa Bay. He's like Barney off of the Flintstones. Hey, friend.
So, Gronk is like, oh, we're playing in the Super Bowl tonight?
That's cool, man.
Oh, hey, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm going to wear those huge white gloves. Is that cool?
It's like goalie gloves.
So, but here's something that he said that I think that you've brought up, and it rings true. He said, I think that in time, Tom got to his late 30s and early 40s, and Bill Belichick treated him like the same 21-year-old guy who they drafted. And all the players knew that Tom was different, but Belichick tried to treat him like everybody else, which you've brought up as you can't treat guys like Tom Brady like everybody else on the team. You can have like this toughness thing going on, but you don't treat Tom Brady like a guy who might not make the 53-man roster.
I don't believe that happened even with Bill Belichick. I don't. I think maybe on the surface of things, maybe that they tried to make that appear that way. I don't believe that was the case at all. Bill Belichick, if he's anything, he's a smart guy. And he knows. He saw Lawrence Taylor He was the defensive coordinator for the Giants, and Bill Barcells did not treat Lawrence Taylor the same way he treated Phil Sims. He treated Lawrence Taylor with kid gloves, and he yelled at Phil Sims.
Good.
Right.
I kind of want Phil Sims to get yelled at. Because if there's a guy who thought that they were successful because of them, it was Phil Sims.
Every coach, every good coach in the NFL does not treat everyone the same. No, I don't buy that.
This is the same guy who got kicked out of the locker room, by the way. Remember Tom Brady tried to always have him in the locker room, and Bill Belichick's like, you're not on the team, dude. All right, we're going to take the break. When we come back, we have our two-minute drill. Got some more stuff to bring up. Hang out here with us. It's KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Geary here with you. You know what? There are days when I don't know that I can get enough sports. I'm just like, oh, there's so many great games, or there's so many great stories.
It's pretty frustrating to, like, my wife, I'll come home after covering a ton of game.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll come home from, it'll be 1:30 in the morning, I'll come home, and I have to wind down a little bit. Even though it was a long drive, I'll get home and I'll be like, and what do I turn on? SportsCenter.
Yeah.
And I will rewatch highlights that I've already seen. I don't care. There's no such thing as getting too much of the sport.
The best and worst thing in the entire world is YouTube. You can find anything on YouTube.
You've gone down that rabbit hole of watching your own highlights before.
But you got the Ryder Cup going on. Yeah. You've got I'm really fascinated to see what Cam Rising does at Utah, and BYU's on a really nice run right now. And then the NFL. I just really think the NFL, has got it right. And
hey, F1 this weekend
too,
Scott.
I actually like watching it.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I do. So
you know, auto racing, whatever it is, you got to go watch it live.
That's the thing, is that I'd love to, but
unless you're from the South, and then you just turn it on Sunday.
No, I'm telling you that, like, I would love to go to an F1 race. They're almost all in Europe. There's one in the United States every year. There's one
Detroit?
In Canada. No.
Used to
do it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's in Circuit of the Americas, which is Austin, Texas.
Oh.
So, yeah, well, one day I'll get down.
Why isn't it in Detroit anymore?
I think
too much crime.
Well, they've no, because they'll have it. It's in Sochi, Russia this weekend. So crime, obviously, they don't care.
Crime in Sochi.
Well, I mean, it's like they race in a lot of places that have
people
human rights violations.
There. There's no crime. They just disappear.
That's part of the problem F1 has right now. They're like, hey, so, you know, you have all this end racism, and we're all for human, treating humans right. And then they're all, anyway, we're racing in Abu Dhabi this weekend. Anyway, we're going to.
Is that a bad place?
Well, there's all these places that have that have a long history of human rights violations.
Isn't there the Le Mans? Isn't there like the road?
The 24-hour of Le Mans?
Le Mans?
Le Mans.
Le Mans?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's like a lemon. Le Mans chill. Scott. What are we doing? Oh, it's two minutes. Yeah, it's 2 minutes. I got to play the music right here. Man, I almost forgot what was going on in my life. All right, so this music plays, and then Scott gives us a rundown of what we do in a two-minute drill. What is it?
Well, let me tell you. Late in a football game, you go down the field, got to score a touchdown, kick field goal. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry our show. Same way, we still have a lot to talk about. Not a lot of time, so we hurry up and talk a little bit about a lot of things. Finish the show, go home with a trophy, 2 COVID shots, a peanut butter bar, some cucumber water, used to be a couple of donuts. You can get free donuts, by the way, if you want.
They did the apple cider donuts at the place we were at last night.
Yeah, those are probably
really
good.
Gotta
avoid
those. Yeah. I took those caramel apples home, and I knew it was going to happen. Family ate them up. They're like piranhas. Yeah, which is nice, because then I look at the stick afterward and go, okay, good.
Speaking of like piranhas eating things.
Yeah, my kids. Yeah.
The old Miami Dolphins locker room. If you left like a caramel apple.
Oh, yeah.
Like by your locker.
It's gone.
You would go into your meeting and come out and just some kind of insects.
No, it wasn't people.
No,
oh, it wasn't.
Well, people did, but
because our newsroom is like that. If you put food out in the newsroom, gone.
The cockroaches get
it. Scott, first up on the old 2 minute drill here. Hey, Jackson Dart, former of Kaysville, Utah fame, of course. Jackson Dart played at Roy High School, played at Quarter Canyon, now plays at USC, has an amazing week last week. Apparently had a minor tear in his meniscus. Had surgery this week, according to the team, and he's going to be out for, as the team said, an extended period of time. You said shouldn't be that long, though.
No.
You think he's going to be playing against Utah?
Meniscus is not
playing next week, right?
Well, in 2 weeks. They have a bye week.
They got
week.
A bye week. That's what I'm saying. He
would be back for that game.
Okay.
Yeah, if he's not back, then it's more than a meniscus.
It's good to know.
Yeah. I've had both of mine done, right and left knee.
Mm.
Not while I played. Actually, after I retired. Long after I retired. And I was up the next day. Now, could I have played at USC the next day? Probably not. But within a week, he should be all right.
Because
you want him to play,
I want him to play against Utah. I want him to play against BYU. I want to see this guy play against everybody. I don't want like, oh yeah, he couldn't play against.
Did you know the teams? Goes down his thing. You know,
he
his
does
face.
It like a last of the Mohicans kind of thing.
Do you know what that stems from?
What is it?
Well, initially he saw this from a DB at LSU when he was in high school, and he goes, "Oh, that's cool. I'm going to do that."
So did he do it all through high school?
Yeah,
it looks dumb.
So then he's a Star Wars guy.
Oh,
so he got into Anakin.
Okay.
And he kind of channels that.
I think it's hilarious that you're talking about, like, this is stuff that, right. Well, you know, Anakin Skywalker, right?
Right. Yeah, you know.
Oh my goodness! All right, next up,
best Christmas present I ever got: Star Wars action figures.
And did you keep them? Because you probably sell them for a
while. No.
You played with them because most kids.
Well, yeah.
I know most kids. They're like,
all my friends had them too. You know who had Princess Leia? Me. I was the only one with Princess Leia. So everyone always wanted to play Star Wars with me because you can't play Star Wars without Princess Leia.
Of course.
Yeah.
Or a Jabba the Hutt. You got to have a Jabba the Hutt figure.
Yeah, Jabba wasn't around.
You could form
he
one
was
out
a
of
later
mud.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Scott, Lane Kiffin says the media needs to leave Nick Saban alone, saying, you don't want to poke the bear. You don't want to get this guy fired up.
I agree with
this. This is also a guy who will fire Nick Saban up. He this week was like, Alabama just cherry picks the transfer portal. He said that this week. So which one is it, Lane Kiffin? Leave Nick Saban alone, or I'm going to make fun of Nick Saban.
Did you ever hear of anyone leaving Alabama, like in the transfer portal? Like picking up players from Alabama is like Burger King and putting Burger Kings next to McDonald's. They just rode the coattails of whatever the giant, and so. Actually, I've never heard of anyone from Alabama like transferring. And the reason is Alabama players, they go and play a couple of years and then they go in the NFL. So
yeah,
like
but
no one,
guys,
no one sticks around for 4 years.
There's a lot of guys who just don't even ever, they're never on your radar because they were five-star guys in high school. They don't even get to play at Alabama and you never saw them play. They didn't play at Alabama and then go transfer somewhere else. Jalen Hurts did it though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
But he started, and then he got booted for Tua.
Yes.
Jalen Hurts might end up being a better quarterback in the NFL than Tua. Yeah, yeah. I didn't like that move by Nick Saban. That was a Bill Belichick move by Nick Saban. By jumping,
Lane Kiffin? Oh.
By jumping Tua over Jalen Hurts.
That's pretty – well, at the time, though,
because that's
off.
That's a Bill Belichick, Tom Brady thing. He's like, I'm going to show you how smart I am as a coach. Well.
That was such a tough deal. So there was that one guy who apparently put all that money on the on a 16-team parlay. He put $20 down, and he was one win away from $746,000. $20, because a 16-team parlay, it just keeps multiplying.
Right.
He just needed one more win on Sunday.
So he picks all of the games.
Or on Monday,
and he gets them all right.
And it was college. You pick kind of your parlay. Oh. You do all the stuff. You kind of just pick all these games.
Really?
Like, hey, you can meander through and go, this one's going to win, this one's going to win. And
is
he,
it
and
meander
he
betting? Is that what it's called?
No. Just a parlay.
Meander
so he go,
parlay.
He went on the parlay, and he needed one more win this week for the $740,000. It was the Monday Night Football matchup. He needed the Lions to win, Scott.
He bet his... He bet his hard-earned $20 on the Detroit Lions.
Hey,
no
come on.
Fool would do that. What,
there you
to
go.
Lose?
They had a pretty good first quarter.
They had pretty cool pretty uniforms good. When they came out of
nice,
the tunnel, and it went all the way downhill from there.
It's true. Oh,
I used
heavens.
To love to get a bratwurst from when I went to. That's all I think.
You
when
got
I,
a brat?
When I hear the Green Bay Packers, it's all.
You'd get a brat from the stadium
after the game was over. They would have. I'd. So what you do is there's an attendant from the the local stadium who manages your locker room.
And you say, hey, man, can you
I give that guy $20. I said, would you just make sure I have some of these for the end of the game?
Yeah.
And they'd go do it for me.
And those were good.
Oh.
They're better than like the old Jansenville you can make at home or something?
Jansenville. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
This is,
you know what? Packers.
Yeah,
right.
That's their thing,
they understand.
Man. They know how to
make
them.
They understand.
As if like Aaron Rodgers is back there mixing in the spices. Come on. Yeah. All right. Scott, we'll be back again tomorrow for a Friday edition of the program. We're looking forward to it. We will see you then. Download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. For Scott, I'm Alex. We'll see you next time, everybody.
KSL-FM Midvale.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.